Blog Talk Radio.
Your host, Merle Exit. It's 7:30 p.m. on my time here in New York City. It was a gorgeous day. It's still a gorgeous day. I came to say it's the temperature, the way they say the temperature is, doesn't seem to be the same. I walked outside today in a short-sleeve shirt, no jacket, and I was fine, but what the hey, you know? But now I am indoors to do the radio show. And we're going to first go into mystery books because I have an author, Margaret Meacham, who has several books, and I think two of them I have, mystery books. One is a ghost book. And I went to see the Broadway show, The Trip to Bountiful, and I'm going to be reviewing that as well. But you know, the bills have to be paid. it's not the reason why I have this commercial, but here it is anyway.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale.
And you can get these wonderful brownies if you go to www.brownies.com, unless you're in somewhere around Phoenix, Arizona, or west of there, and you may find it in the store. They are so worth it. Anyway, let's get away from the brownies and let's get into some things about writing. And so, Margaret, how are you?
Hi, Merle. I'm fine, thanks.
So, introduce yourself.
I'm Margaret Meacham, and I write children's books and mysteries, and I teach at Gotham Writers Workshops and at Goucher College in Baltimore.
Is that all?
Pretty much.
Before I even go into the books, I wanted to ask you a question about women authors. Is there the same pay and publicity as male authors, especially when it comes to mystery?
It depends. I would say they're in recent years probably pretty equal. A lot of women readers are mystery readers, so women writers have a big following, and there's not too much difference, I don't think.
Oh, okay.
It depends on the quality of the book, you know.
And you get as much publicity.
I would say, yeah. Not me personally. But because I've only written one adult mystery so far. Most of my books are young adult and kids books.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Laura Lippman gets plenty of publicity. Some of the, you know, the best women mystery writers get their fair share, I think.
Okay. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Well, tell us, I want to go first into this book that I got from you, The Survival of Sarah Landing. And my
right.
question before we go into it, are you writing it from, are you the person in it?
Not really, no. I
okay.
mean, there are some similarities.
I was just curious.
Yeah, there are definitely some similarities, but I'm certainly not her.
Okay, so let's talk about the book. Tell us pretty much a synopsis of what the book is about.
It's about a writer in her 40s. Her name is Sarah Landing, and she is a widow with three children. Her husband was killed very suddenly in a car accident, and she's a picture book artist and writer. And she, since he died 3 years prior to when the book begins, she has had writer's block, and she's now going broke and trying to support her three kids who are 16, 14, and 8, and trying to keep things together for them. And she gets a picture book manuscript in the mail, and it's from a student. She also teaches the art of the picture book, a class at the local community center, and she gets this manuscript from a student that's going to be taking her class, upcoming class, in the mail, and it's such a beautiful manuscript that it kind of breaks her writer's block and kicks her into gear with her own story. And she meets with the author, artist, and they've become friendly, and Sarah's very excited that she can help this writer publish and excited to see such beautiful work. And she's looking forward to the student whose name is Louisa Minor taking her class, and the class comes and Louisa Minor doesn't show up, and a couple weeks go by and it turns out that Louisa Minor's been found dead, drowned, and nobody really knows what happened, but the police begin to suspect that it was suicide, and other people don't believe that, and Sarah gets drawn into the mystery. And meanwhile, there's a lot of stuff going on with her kids and humor surrounding that, and it's a humorous as well as mysterious. So that's it.
Okay, so you don't want to, we're not going to go into any more of it then.
Well, yeah, you got to read the book if you want to find out how
right.
Sarah gets drawn into the mystery and what happens to Louisa.
So, and is are we going to be going, just to, for people on this, are we going to go sort of the style of what Angela Lansbury? What is the murder? You know, the
Murder She Wrote.
Murder She Wrote, where she's a mystery writer and she winds up solving
a
mystery.
No, she's not a mystery writer. She's a picture book author.
Oh, okay. Oh, I got it. Okay, so she just gets drawn into the mystery.
She gets drawn into the mystery because she's very concerned about her student and what happened to her, and she's. You know, she liked her, and she wanted to help her, and then the student disappears and later turns up dead.
Now, the other book is about ghosts, huh?
Pardon me?
The other book is a ghostly
Ghost,
book.
Ghosts of Laurelford, yes. It's a historical mystery, young adult.
Okay. Now, in terms of this book as being historical mystery, where does it, in terms of the location, what's the location?
The location, it takes place outside Pittsburgh. I grew up in Pittsburgh. I spent my summers on the eastern shore of Maryland, but I grew up in Pittsburgh. And this book takes place about an hour north of Pittsburgh in the Laurel Mountains, which there are real Laurel Mountains, but the place where it takes place, Laurelford, is a made-up mansion, and the family's a made-up family.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it takes place, in 1919. And the main character, Lacey, is a young suffragette.
Okay.
At that time, it
the interviews and the reading club.
Sorry. Hello?
Yes.
Could you hold on 1 minute?
Yeah, well, sure. Well, I'd break for a commercial, but I don't think it's a... we don't know how long.
Hi, sorry.
Yeah, sure.
So what was the question?
Oh, so I was going... What I was going into, you said you were saying where it was located. So,
yes.
Yeah, so now... When you say historical, in other words, was this something that they believe
it takes
goes...
It's in 1919. It's historical fiction, historical mystery fiction.
So, I mean, was this something that people believe could have happened, or this is just something that you're creating?
Well, I'm creating it as one creates fiction, but it's historical fiction in that it takes place in 1919.
Right. Okay, so in other words...
And there is, much
yeah.
of it is based on what the times were like, and there are no real ghosts in it. If you've read it, you can see that. But there is a young woman who puts on seances. At that time, spiritualism was very popular, and many, many people believed it. Arthur Conan Doyle, Sherlock Holmes, the author of Sherlock Holmes, believes in spiritualism and believed that people could contact others from who had passed over, as they said. And the main character, Lacey, she's 15 and is a suffragette, and her grandfather is a retired detective. She lives with him, and he is very much a skeptic, and doesn't believe in spiritualism and is hired to prove that Mademoiselle Mathilde, who is the spiritualist, is a fraud. Meanwhile, Lacey befriends Mademoiselle Mathilde. So there's a little bit of, I don't go one way or the other in terms of, I don't believe in spiritualism, of course, but I believe that Mademoiselle Mathilde may have, as a character, had some ability to perceive things that other people can't.
Okay. Where are these, how many, in terms of mystery books themselves, how many have you written?
I've written 4 mysteries, Secret of Heron Creek, Oyster Moon, Ghosts of Lawford, and Survival of Sarah Landing. And I've written several other books for children and young adults.
Well, in terms of your writing, do you have a preference in your whether you enjoy the writing of the mystery books versus the, children's books or young adult books?
I like all of them. I get a character in my mind, but that character just sort of keeps coming back to me, and then I figure out a story to go along with the character for the most part. That's mostly how they begin. And I like writing about certain settings, and... I like the way certain settings, whether they're historical or contemporary in a certain place, what effect they can have on a certain character and how they act and react.
And with the children's books, how do you lean in what kind of, in terms of, like, are they humorous? Are they meant to
some
be?
Some are. I have some of my first young adults were sort of humorous romance, a little bit of romance, family stories. And then I did Secret of Heron Creek. I did 3 regional books set on the Eastern Shore that were sort of adventures, mystery adventures, and 1 historical mystery, Oyster Moon. And then I did 3 humorous books. One was called, which were also fantasies. One is Quiet, You're Invisible. And then I did 2 that were based on the same set of characters, A Midsummer Night's Dream and A Fairy's Guide to Understanding Humans. And those 2 were both humorous fantasies, and they both dealt with the same characters.
And
then after that, I did, several other books in and out of there, which were mostly just children's books, young adult books. And then I did, in this past fall, I had The Ghosts of Lawford and Survival of Sarah Landing released.
Now, what is when you're doing this your book signings? Do you basically do them in your local area, or do you travel?
I'll do both. If I feel that it's going to be a great venue and there'll be a lot of people interested in my books, I'll travel. A lot of them are within, Baltimore, well, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Virginia, that area. Sometimes New York, because I teach up there. Well, I teach online, but sometimes I teach live workshops for Gotham Writers Workshop, and I teach online for them, and they're in New York.
Okay, and when you say you teach, what is it that you're actually, you're teaching writers how to write? Is it
Yes. I teach children's how to write children's books, and I teach a course at Goucher called Teachers as Writers, Writers as Teachers, and I teach a course in young adult literature.
That's interesting, to teach writing. What it is, do you look over people's writings? Is that
Well, it's for Gotham, there are 10-week courses. They're all writers, published writers that teach them. And they're real fiction writers, memoir writing, whatever the writer's specialty is. And there are 10-week courses. We post a lecture and then for people to read online. And then a discussion question for people to just react to and discuss. And then we post in the notebook, what's called the notebook, we post an assignment or a suggestion for an exercise. And then students post their responses and their homework back to us, and we look it over and make suggestions. And then they also have the chance to post a longer piece that the whole class can read and critique, and then the instructor critiques at the end of the week.
So,
and we have 10 lectures. The first one in my class, the first one is about children's books just in general, and then creating strong characters, and then plot and structure, and then a voice, how to create a strong voice and point of view, and then creating setting and description, and revising, and then finally the business of publishing.
Yeah, and in terms of the business of publishing, are you recommending more for people to do their own kind of thing? Because there's a lot of, I guess, companies that you can.
Yeah, I suggest when people have a manuscript that they are fully happy with and they believe is publishable, and they've been told by other people that they think it's publishable, preferably people who know something about the industry, then I think maybe try to go the traditional route. It's very competitive, but, that way you get paid for your book rather than having to pay to have it published. You get paid.
Right, that's what I was going to say.
So I suggest people do that first, and then if that doesn't work, nowadays they have the option of self-publishing fairly inexpensive way, and a lot more people are doing it and actually being successful with it. So it's a viable option, I think, more so than it used to be, self-publishing.
Sure. I was considering, well, I did publish a book, but I was considering.
Okay. What kind?
Oh, I did one. It's biographical, autobiographical. I've been a comedian for several years, so I published this whole thing about my life as, my funny life, humor in my life.
Did you self-publish?
Because I do a lot of travel articles, but I didn't put that in there because, well, that's a whole other thing. I can do a book on travel. But what I wound up doing, I guess, I forgot to tell you. What I do is this has been a while, about 2-3 years. I have two rubber chickens, and I bring them with me when I travel. And I pose them, and they have their own blog. And it's just and there's
great.
A point, and I thought to myself, you know, there would maybe better to publish a book on their travels with the photos of them, and that would sell better than if I did it of my own travels.
That could be hilarious. Sounds.
Yeah, because that was one of the things I thought about. I just it really gets cute because usually when I'm with tourism, as a matter of fact, I have a whole bunch when I was in Talbot County, and what winds up happening, I start to do, and then I get these looks, from people, especially from tourism that are with me or something. And all of a sudden,
right.
Now they get into it, and they start posing the chickens. Oh, let's pose it over here. This would look good.
Oh, that's great. That could be a lot of fun.
Yeah. So now, when you, what made you start to do writing, by the way, to write?
Well, I've wanted to write ever since I was in second grade when I loved being read. We had a teacher who read aloud to us, and I just loved the books that she read, and I just thought how amazing it was that writers could create this amazing world that seemed so real to me and create characters that seemed as real to me as the kids sitting right next to me, and I just thought it was kind of a miracle. And I've always, always loved to read, and I believe that that's the main prerequisite for anybody who wants to write is you have to love to read. I can't imagine why you would want to write if you didn't, really. Why would you want to paint if you don't enjoy paintings and art? Or why would you want to be a musician if you don't like music? You know, same type of thing. So that's mostly what it was, loving to read and admiring the writers and their skill and wanting to know more about how they did it and then trying it myself.
So, and when was your first, book published? How long ago?
My first book was published, about 30 years ago now.
Oh, okay.
Quite a while ago. I was in my late 20s.
Uh-huh.
But I worked, before that, I wrote all through school. I was an English major in college. I wanted to write. I always wanted to write, but I also wanted to eat. And I knew that it's difficult, to make a living as a writer in the beginning when you're unpublished and new. And so I became a librarian, and that's where I rediscovered children's books. And I saw, first of all, how great so many of them were, and also saw how much the kids that would come into the library, if I could put the right books in their hands, how much it meant to them and how sometimes it could really change the way they saw the world and make them see things differently, hopefully in a good way. And I just thought that was great. That's writers, I think, do like to help people and make a statement and
right.
change up things a little bit. And so I saw that as a great way to do it. Adults can be a little bit more set in their ways, I think, than kids. So if you can make kids see the world in a different way and see that they have options and they can make a difference themselves, I think it's great. And so that's what I like doing with my children's books and my young adult books. And then I just love to read so much that I had to write adult books as well.
Right. But when it comes to children, I would imagine, years ago, let's say, you read on it, you got a sense of, on what level you read on,
right.
I mean? Like whether you read on second grade level, fifth grade, that kind of a thing.
Well, I don't know if kids
but
don't.
But kids
that
these
way.
Days, I mean, they're so they all got computers, so it's I think they learn quicker than we did in terms of
learn to read or.
Well, I don't know whether they have more access to things, even if they don't want to read it, they can hear it. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Which is great. I love audiobooks too.
Yeah, and so the thing is in terms of books, I don't know. Let's say you're writing a children's book, you have to decide on what age kind of range.
Well, I think it generally, what I believe with children's books is that a lot of times it's dependent on how old the character is. If your kids like to read about a character generally a little bit older than they are, so if your character that you have in mind, I begin with characters, as I said, and if your character that you have in mind is 15, it's probably going to be a good book for 12, 13, 14-year-olds.
Right.
If your character is 8, it'd probably make a nice picture book or maybe an easy reader. You know, if your character's an animals and ghosts and those kind of picture book characters are generally, you know, people need to understand that those are substitutes for humans. They're not, that's why they're used. So you still need to create a fully developed character with characteristics. And they can have some, if you have a dog as your main character, they can have some dog-like characteristics, but they're also going to have to show some aspect of human nature that will, you know, create your story.
Right. But in terms of, I'm saying in terms of, like, of the vocabulary that you're using, it's,
I never write down to kids. If I'm writing about an 8-year-old, I see the world through that 8-year-old's eyes, so I would write using the vocabulary of that particular 8-year-old. And
right.
If it happens to be a very smart 8-year-old, the vocabulary would be vocabulary that a smart 8-year-old would use.
Okay. So you just, you know.
It's about the character.
Yeah. Okay. Is there, these are your, is it The Survival of Sarah Landing, was that your latest, or did you have another one?
Yes. Well, that and Ghost of Ralph were released at the same time. I was sort of working on them both simultaneously and happened to find a publisher that liked them both and wanted to publish them both together, and it just so happened that it worked out, and it's been really fun having them both out at the same time.
And also, for people that feel like doing some writing, writer's block, what do you do when that happens?
Well, there's lots of different ways around it. Reading, for me, often gets me inspired. Just reading other works, and I'll get an idea, or I'll just sit down and, you know, feel like I can write because I really want to because I've been inspired. Other things you can do are free writing, which is when you can even use a timer, time yourself for, say, 10 minutes and just sit down at your computer or even with a pen and pencil and write without thinking about it, you don't worry about punctuation or you don't worry about proper words. You don't even worry about what you're saying. You can even write, like, this is the stupidest assignment I've ever heard. I don't believe this person said for me to do this. But don't lift your pen from the paper or your fingers from the keys. Just keep on going for 10 minutes. And sometimes that will just help you. It can help in a lot of ways. It can get the stuff in your mind that's been bugging you out on the paper and out of your head. And it can just sometimes bring up some ideas from your subconscious that you didn't know were kicking around in there.
Mm-hmm.
Some people do it every day just as a matter of practice, like an athlete would lift weights.
Right. Yeah,
and
I read something about you should write every day.
I don't think it has to be every day. I mean, I'm always thinking about my work one way or the other. And I try to write on a regular schedule most mornings if I'm not teaching or something. But I almost, you know, I try very hard to write every morning, at least for a couple hours. But I don't always write on weekends. I'm always thinking about it and usually jotting down notes here or there. But, you know, I don't think the world will stop if you don't write every day. But I do think it's important to write on a schedule that you set for yourself and that makes sense. I think it's better for people to write, say, make a deal with themselves. I even have a contract for my students that they make with themselves that I will write maybe even 40 minutes 3 times a week at a time that makes sense with their schedule and then really stick to that. I think that's way better than saying I'm going to write for 4 hours every day because probably you won't be able to stick to that.
Yeah, that's
especially
true.
If you have a life and a job and kids and the things that people mostly have at least some of.
Yeah, that's. I cheat. I have a machine actually. In case I have writer's block, I have this thing. It's it has these glasses, and it has the things that you put in your ears. And what it does is the machine, you can program, put on whichever program you want, and there's an actual program, and what it does is it, like, totally relaxes you and then, you know, brings you up again, but it totally, like, clears your mind. And huh. You could actually, with one of them, you can actually be doing this while you're writing.
Huh, that sounds kind of interesting.
And the thing is, when I have to remember not to use it too much, because what winds up happening to me is I'll do that, and all of a sudden I just won't stop writing. I'm going, oh, let's do next month's article. Oh, I got one for 3 weeks from now. And I just
go. Wow, that sounds great. I got to get one of them.
Just go on and on. You know? Because I get to a point, it's now like, oh, let's see, and you have to get 3 or 4 or 5 articles done by whatever. Within the next 4 or 5 days. And in my head just goes, yeah, okay, you know, I could probably do them all tonight if I wanted to, if I stick that thing in my head.
Where do you get one of these?
Yeah, and but actually it's interesting, because when people are asking me how I what started me writing, it was I just like, I don't know, just felt like doing something different. And I just, oh, look at that. I can write. Oh, I can write some more. Oh, this is fun. I think I'll keep writing.
Well, that's great.
But books is not. Books, I only actually, what I wound up doing, the reason I even wrote a book is I had so many people telling me, because my life is so funny, they said, you need to write a book. And I kept saying, you need to write a book. I said, okay, let's do that. Let's go write a book. Let's see if I can remember my life.
Well, that's one good thing about it. It doesn't help you remember stuff. But you got to write it down, you know.
Yeah. But so I understand that the bookstore, yes, that I was at.
Mystery Loves Company?
Mystery Loves Company, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so I did a signing there last weekend.
Oh, okay. Was last weekend also the Oxford weekend?
That's right. It was Oxford Day. Yeah.
Oxford Day. Oh, how was it?
Beautiful day. It was lovely. It was a beautiful day, and lots of people coming through, and they had a nice little small town parade, which was so fun to see. And it was great. We sold a lot of books and had a lot of fun.
And I think the judging of the fences is coming up, isn't it? Not judging of the auction.
Of the what?
The fences, the 5 slats.
Oh, yes. They were telling me about that, which I didn't know about. But, yeah, that's coming up, I think, which is going to be great.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
But, I did, too, yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, so anyway, keep in touch with me.
Absolutely.
When the next one comes out.
All right, I will do that.
And thank you for sharing with us.
I
love the book.
Okay, and I hope you'll like them on Amazon. You know, you can click the like button. That's always helpful.
Oh, the like.
Gotta have those reviews and likes. Yeah.
I know. So it's like it gets to be humorous to me after a while.
It does. Make a great humor program would be terrific with all that. Doing, you know, everything we have to do nowadays.
Oh,
no time to write, because you got to be, you know, liking everything and blogging.
You
got to
like and tweet.
Right, exactly.
I mean, because what has happened is when I'm ready to go on a press trip and these tourism people, they ask me about the stuff like how many people listen to my radio show, how many people. Am I on Facebook? And they're asking me all these questions, and I go, but wait a minute. I write for 4 hard copy newspapers. Doesn't that count?
Really? That's terrific. Yeah. And that's
but
hard,
it's like,
too. You got to do that every day. And, yeah.
And they're looking for numbers. And I'm going, but the reality is, let's just say I had, just as a number, 10,000 friends, so to speak, okay? And I have a deal with them that every time I post something about an article I wrote, that they need to like it or click it.
Right.
Now, it could be that nobody reads it, actually reads the article, but because it's clicked.
They'll still do it, yeah.
Then the people who are trying to see how many clicks I get think they're
You're doing great, yeah.
Yes,
I know.
Nobody read it.
Yeah,
So how good? What good is that? But anyway.
I know.
When I go to the, so I should go to your Facebook? Is
well,
that
the
it?
Ideal would be to read to review them, read the books, review them. That's what works.
Oh, okay.
On Amazon.
Oh, so
yeah.
I can, so on Amazon.com, can I post a review on that?
Sure, that would be awesome.
Which is probably better than if I actually put it into a hard copy newspaper.
Well, it would be both. Both would be great. I'd love it.
All right, let's see what I could do.
Okay, terrific. I'd appreciate it. And Goodreads is also great. Do you know Goodreads? They're actually owned by Amazon. I think Amazon bought them, but it's a great place for readers to find out books you want to read and share with other readers. So.
Okay. All right, thanks again for calling in.
All right, thank you. Nice talking to you.
All right, have a great evening.
You too, Merle. Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Yes, writing books. Yeah, now that I really, really have to do that. I got Esther and Eunice, and now I have Marilyn and Minerva, too. But I think the costly part of that, doing this, would be that with the all of the photos. That's what I'm guessing. But, okay. I'm going to take a music break. I had gotten into Jim Brickman songs again. And I had received one particular album called Ultimate Love Songs, The Very Best of Jim Brickman. And as I looked at it, I noticed that these are all Jim Brickman songs, but that he wrote for other people. And I just never realized. And I'm going to play one right now that's sung by Michael Bolton called Hear Me.
Water my life with tears like rain. Hear me, hear my words, I'm burning. The sun I'm making perfect. Hear me.
I just love that song. I like the beat. I like the words, of course. The music. I'll play another one of the songs after I go into the Broadway show that I saw, The Trip to Bountiful. Okay, now, let me first share that I do not remember the movie. I think I saw the movie, but I don't remember it. So, based upon that, I'm just going to tell you, about the show. The first thing that one needs to know is who was in it. Okay. Cicely Tyson, Cuba Gooding Jr., Vanessa Williams, Condola Rashad, and Tom Wopat. Yes, all in one play. Okay, so just let's give you a good sense of this. As the curtain rises, we see the living room and bedroom of a small two-room apartment in 1953 Houston, Texas. The two rooms have been furnished little money kind of thing. Okay, upstage, living room, there's a door that leads to the hallway, the kitchen, the bathroom. And at the opposite end of the hallway is a door that's leading to the bedroom. So now to get back and forth between these two rooms, you got to go out into the hallway, and which is important to know because, I'll explain. In the living room, there's a window and that looks out on the street. Now, above the window is a wardrobe in which Cicely Tyson playing Mrs. Watts, and her clothes and other belongings are there. And also in the wardrobe is a suitcase and her purse. And she's got a rocking chair next to the window. And against the rear wall, that's a desk. On the desk is a phone, newspaper, radio, and a movie magazine. Okay, just to kind of give you that kind of setting. In the meantime, so she's sitting in a rocking chair, and the lights are out in the bedroom. And Ludie is her son, who's the one who's Cuba Gooding Jr., and Jesse May are both in bed, and Jesse May is played by Vanessa Williams. And Ludie gets out of the bed, he goes into the hallway, and he sees that his mother is up and humming a hymn. There's not a friend like the lowly Jesus. Okay, so the basic situation is that Cicely Tyson wants to be able to go back to the town she grew up in and had a house and brought the kids up in the town called Bountiful. And this is how this kind of runs. And she's having a lot of trouble. She doesn't get along with her daughter-in-law, or her daughter-in-law doesn't get along with her. Cicely Tyson is, I can't believe that she's as old as she is in this, because every time, one of the problems, the upset, is that every time, like, when she goes into the hallway, and especially when she goes, like, from one room to another, she runs. And she's running, you know, and the daughter-in-law keeps, you know, saying to her to not run. I think it's more the noise, I think, as opposed to being concerned that that her mother-in-law is going to have a heart attack. She's getting on in age, and, you know, she's tired, but she's Mrs. Watts, a Sicily type, she can't sleep. She can't sleep at night. She said especially because when there's a full moon, I don't know. So this goes on. It's rather, there's a lot of humor in this, especially things that come out of Cicely Tyson's mouth in there. So that's basically like all this is pretty much kind of like the first act of this thing. And then the second act, what she winds up doing, she hops a bus. She runs away, which they keep wanting her not to do. And she runs away, and so she can get on a bus and go to Bountiful. And that's pretty much like what the second act is about, with her, you know, getting to the bus station and taking the bus and avoiding her son and daughter-in-law while she's trying to get the bus. And okay, and there's more. But even if I told you the ending, it doesn't even matter. So, because it's not that type of a play. But what it really boils down to, was it good? The question is, was it good? I understand it's got like 14 nominations or something like that. I don't know when it got all the nominations, because the thing just, I mean, it just pretty much opened, but that's okay. Cicely Tyson has to get, I can't imagine her not getting a Tony for this. I mean, everybody else was great, but she, of all of them, stood out because, well, no, I was going to say not just the character she was given, but her performance. It was just absolute delight just to keep watching her. Like every time she had a line, or every time, you know, something involved her, it was great. Now, as far as Condoleezza Rashad. Okay, Condoleezza Rashad, we get to meet her when Cicely Tyson is at this bus stop. So, and basically, she just happens to be there, and when Cicely Tyson actually goes on the bus and takes a trip, she's with her on the bus. So that's kind of where we get to see her. And we get to see Tom Wolpat. Tom Wolpat is actually playing the part of a sheriff, interestingly enough, which I found kind of humorous. Every time, you know, when the actors came on, I mean, Cicely Tyson comes on, everybody applauds. Cuba Gooding, everybody. Vanessa Williams comes on. Condoleezza Rashad, I don't think people recognize her as much. And I thought when Tom Wolpat came on, I said, oh, everybody knows Tom Wolpat. He's going to get applause. Nothing. Not a thing. I was like, okay. But that's okay. So the question boils down to, should you see it? Okay. Definitely. Definitely needs to be seen. And with the tickets, with the ticket prices, the way that they are, you could sit anywhere. I mean, just, you know, if you can't afford it, sit in the mezzanine all the way in the back and bring a pair of binoculars and put the earphones in your ear and the whole bit. I mean, just to see it. Because I think for that, I think you can get tickets for about $38 if you do it that way. The interesting thing is about this theater. I don't remember going to it prior. This is Stephen Sondheim Theater. Well, I don't remember what it was before, but it was renovated and it became the Stephen Sondheim Theater. What's so weird is when you enter, you're entering on the mezzanine level, and you got to go down 2 flights to go to be in the orchestra. Good thing they got elevators, because I could, you know, I managed to get 1 flight down, because 1 flight down you get to get to the ladies' room, whatever. But, you know, coming back, it was like, let me get in that elevator to get out there. Theater's gorgeous, but, but anyway, so I, as I said, I highly, absolutely highly recommend it. I hope that Cicely Tyson gets a Tony Award. Now, I'm going to be seeing a show tomorrow evening. It's actually community theater that a friend of mine has actually written about the about Queens County here in New York City. And now what I want to do for you at the moment is I want to take a break again, because here's another one I absolutely did not know that Jim Brickman had anything to do with. Here we go.
I'd want to call in sick. I always dreaded this time of day, but not anymore, cause of you. Smiling you, perfect you. Good morning, beautiful. I know it's gonna be a good morning, beautiful. When you're waking up with me, it's gonna be a good morning, beautiful. Nothing could take this smile from my face. Whether sunshine or whether the rain, I can weather any weather with you. Smiling you, perfect you. All I need is just to see your face. Whether the sunshine or whether the rain, I can weather any weather with you. Smiling you, perfect you.
Hill song. Okay, well, I could keep playing his music from now until forever. But I'm going to end the show because I'm going to go have dinner. And next week we'll talk about a particular thing I've been eating. Well, it's bagels and not just your normal bagel. And that what we'll be talking about next week. So, everybody, have a good day, good evening, good afternoon. Take care of yourself. Stay safe. I don't know what else to say. And enjoy yourself. Okay. Bye, everybody. Let's go find here. Oh, here we are. Yeah.